That song and perhaps Amazing Grace are the two most difficult songs to get up and preach after. So thank you, Jeff. If you would, please, turn your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 1. I want to talk to you about a man who bears one of my favorite names in all of the Bible. It's a man named Onesiphorus. It seems over the last few years that we've had kind of a steady supply of babies being born here. And I just suggest to you mothers, you know, there's a possibility of a name there if you'd like to jot that down and keep it in the file. Onesiphorus, we know really nothing more about him than what is said in this text and in 2 Timothy. He was almost certainly a Gentile by virtue of his name, and very likely was an Asian, and quite possibly coming from the city of Ephesus. And so it would be, I think, not out of line to think in terms of this man being there in Ephesus, possibly some of the time when Paul was there, and but certainly involved in that work that we see unfolding through the scriptures over a course of many years, as the scriptures make several references to Ephesus. And this was a man who was most probably right there in the midst of all that was going on. He's a man who, in the text that we're going to read here in just a moment, whose religion is very briefly described to us, but very wonderfully described to us. If you'd look there in the text in 2 Timothy, verse 16 says that the Lord, Paul writing to Timothy here, the Lord grant mercy to the house of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he was in Rome, he eagerly searched for me and found me. The Lord grant to him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you know very well what services he rendered at Ephesus. That's not a whole lot to know, you know, or to say about the life of a man, but that's all that we have about Onesiphorus. But when you stop and you think about it, it's a treasure trove of information about this man and about his faith. His religion was a very practical religion. We see where Paul says that he oft refreshed me. That is, this was a man who took the opportunities that he had to act towards Paul and to do for Paul that which he found to be refreshing. And if you're familiar with the life of the Apostle Paul, you're well aware of all of the challenges that he faced, the commitment that he made in the preaching of the gospel, and at what cost Paul performed his responsibilities. But yet in this man Onesiphorus, he found someone who could refresh him, who could do for him certain things that restored his vigor. Over in the book of Philemon, we find where the Apostle Paul writes there about another individual, and abilities that person had to provide the same the same kind of service to others. Philemon, in verse 7, he says, "For I have come to have much joy and comfort in your love, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you, brother." This man Philemon apparently had the same capability to provide a refreshing to brethren. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and in verse 13, Paul writes, "For this reason we have been comforted, and besides our comfort we rejoiced even much more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all." There the compliment is to an entire church, to the church in Corinth, whose ways and responses to the appearance of Titus and the teaching of Titus refreshed him. I wonder if sometimes we lose sight of the fact of just what we can do for one another just by our presence. I'm reminded of Paul's journey towards Rome as a prisoner. And the text tells us in Acts, the 28th chapter, that as he neared Rome, the brethren came out from Rome, and they came down the Appian Way, a portion of the way, and they met Paul as he was being brought in as a prisoner, attached to some Roman soldier. And the text says that when Paul saw the brethren, that he took heart. I mean, just to see them was encouraging to him. And there had been many occasions, apparently, where just to see Onesiphorus had brought a similar kind of refreshing to the spirit of even a man like Paul. We need to remember what we can be to one another, what we can provide to one another. His religion was not only practical, his religion was unaffected by unpopularity. Paul writes in that text that he was not ashamed of my chains. Paul, of course, at the time of the writing of 2 Timothy, was a prisoner. Actually, 2 Timothy is probably the last of the epistles that Paul would write. So he's very near the end of his life. And as a prisoner, he was chained because of his faith, because of his commitment to Christ. But yet, he says of this man, Onesiphorus, that he thinks so much of, he says that he was not ashamed of my chains. Don't you suppose that may kind of imply that there were some people who were ashamed of his chains? If the implication is not that there were some who had showed some embarrassment about his plight as a prisoner, it certainly is an implication that's a possibility. What does it take to embarrass you about the Lord? What does it take to cause you to be ashamed of the things associated with Christ? It seems like it probably would have taken a lot. Maybe there wasn't enough even to do it to move this man Onesiphorus to embarrassment or to shame about his association with this man Paul. Paul was certainly a man who was not on the best of terms with Roman authorities. And it would have been, I think we can imagine how it would have been in some ways risky to have associated oneself with such a person, with a person who's now in custody and to be put on trial for his life. There are a lot of examples throughout the scriptures of people who allowed fear and shame to prevent them from serving the Lord. I think of Nicodemus and his fear of his fellow Jews, so that when he comes to Jesus in the Gospel of John, he comes by night so that nobody will know it. And he talks to the Lord about some pretty important subjects. But fear had apparently paralyzed that man, so that he didn't want his companions among the Pharisees to know that he was asking questions of this man, Jesus. What does it take to cause you to be afraid because of your association with Christ? Is there some point at which your association with your friends or with your family, is there some point at which you would be willing to compromise out of fear? Not only was this man's religion practical in that it enabled him to actually provide something good, some kind of a service, a refreshment to Paul. Not only was his religion unaffected by the unpopularity of Paul, so that he wasn't even ashamed of Paul's chains, but his religion was also what I've called transportable. Paul writes about the fact that when Onesiphorus came to Rome, we don't know why he went to Rome. It may have been to search out Paul and help Paul during this time, this critical time in his life. Onesiphorus could have been a merchant, and he had a business trip to Rome. We just don't know why he went to Rome. But we do know that he went to Rome, as Paul makes reference. And the, I think, admirable thing about Onesiphorus is that when he went to Rome, he was still the same fellow that he was back in Ephesus. His commitment to his religious beliefs didn't change. There are an awful lot of folks whose religious beliefs are not transportable. They grow up at home under the influence of their parents, and they are influenced in all the best of ways. And then the time in life comes and they're off to university somewhere. Or they get a job and they're transferred off to another place, to another city. And what happens? Their faith is no longer that important element in their life. Now they find the opportunity to sleep in late. And now they find the opportunity to go and do some things that are, you know, fun with the new crowd that they are encountering at their job or on campus. I cannot tell you how many times, and it's happened in every place that I have ever lived and preached, and most of my preaching has been done in larger cities. And in every single place, some Sunday there will be a family to show up. Parents that are a little bit older, getting on in years. And with them will be a son or a daughter who's, in their mid-20s now. And as you talk to them and, greet them and welcome them, and what you find out is that mom and dad have come to town to visit Junior, who has lived here now for 3 or 4 years. We've never seen Junior before. But he's lived here for 3 or 4 years, and now that mom and dad have come for a visit Sunday morning, mom and dad are going to go to church, and so Junior goes, the dutiful son goes with them. But the question is, where has Junior been? He's been sleeping in late, or he's been off doing the fun things with the friends, and he's not been practicing the religion that he practiced growing up. He's not been practicing the religion that his parents instructed him in all those years and growing up. You see, religion is not always transportable. When people move away and they move to a different place, oftentimes, that's the occasion to discontinue the practice of their religious beliefs, to make those changes in their life that they desire to make. I have no way of knowing how many people there are living in this Orange County area who once were faithful members of the Lord's church back somewhere else before they moved here. But can you imagine? Can you just think for a moment? It must be in the thousands. How many thousands of people no longer faithful to the Lord? Can you imagine if that's the case, if I'm not just, completely out of my mind here about estimating these numbers, but if that's the case, can you imagine the crowded church buildings that would exist today among the Lord's people in places where, quite frankly, the crowds are diminishing? I tell you what, Onesiphorus is an admirable man because his religion was practical, because his religion was unaffected by criticisms and unpopularity in the eyes of others, and because his religion was transportable. He carried it with him to Rome. He continued to live it out in Rome. His religion was also one that was without excuses. He eagerly searched for me, Paul says. He eagerly searched for me and found me. This man, unashamed of Paul's imprisonment, and yet when he was in Rome, in the capital of Paul's jailers, he eagerly searched for me and found me. He made no excuses. He didn't get to Rome and say, well, you know, Rome's an awful big place. How am I ever going to find Paul, one man in this city? Now, he eagerly searched and found him. He made no excuses at all. I'm made to think of that situation I was talking about just a moment ago, and how many folks there are who have grown up and now they've moved away and they're living on their own, and their faith has been abandoned. And we talk about that junior that was, you know, that was, and when you say something to a person in that situation, very often you invite them to come back, we'd love to see you, and so, then the excuses come. And I want to tell you that the excuses are pretty feeble. I mean, it's been 3 or 4 years since you've been to church somewhere. You would think in 3 or 4 years he could come up with something better. But he really hasn't given it much thought. The feeble explanations or reasons that we often offer for why we're not doing what the Lord expects of us and what we know that the Lord expects of us and what we know that He knows that we know that He expects of us. Take for example Moses. You remember the story of Moses, and God called him to be His spokesman. And what did Moses immediately begin to do? He began to offer excuses. Oh, I can't do that. I'm not an effective speaker. And God found a way for Moses to do exactly what He wanted Moses to do. And to his credit, Moses was willing to do it. Because Moses, too, was a man with a religion that was without excuses when you got down to the bottom line. And Onesiphorus was a man whose religion was good at home, too. The Lord grant him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you know very well what services he rendered at Ephesus. And you know what happens a lot of times is just the opposite of what I was talking about a moment ago. People leave home, they go to a new place and a new place to live, and they don't practice their faith. Well, what happens sometimes is just exactly the opposite. Is people go, they leave someplace, they leave their home, they go someplace else for some visit, and for the time of the visit, they practice their religion. But if you followed them back home, when they got back home, they're uninvolved. They're not the same person. There could be many reasons for that. I hesitate to say it, but sometimes it may be because the place that they're visiting, they're there on business, and it can be advantageous sometimes for business purposes to be the stalwart religious sort of fellow And then when you get back home, you're your normal self. But for whatever the reasons may be, the point is that we can be something we're not. We can pretend to be something we're not when we're elsewhere. Onesiphorus is a commendable fellow. He's an admirable fellow because he was a fellow who was just exactly at home, like he was when he was traveling and somewhere else. He was the same person. A person who would bring refreshment to the heart of Paul. A person who would be unashamed of the gospel and his association with the gospel. A fellow who would eagerly seek out to do what he could do, even when he's in a strange place. He was an admirable man. And though you may never choose to name your son Onesiphorus, I hope you never forget him or fail to learn from him what you and I ought to be. It may be that some in our midst this morning are not Christians, and that you would like to become just exactly what Onesiphorus was. That's just a Christian. The manner in which he became a Christian, the manner in which Paul became a Christian, the manner in which every person in the New Testament that we read about became a Christian was by giving their obedience to the gospel of Jesus, turning away from their sins based on their faith that Jesus is the Son of God, confessing that faith in Christ, and being baptized. People became Christians and then live lives like this man Onesiphorus. And if it's your desire to begin that kind of a life today, then we encourage you to come to him in obedience while we stand and sing.